No, shut up for a second. No, in the corner, back by the wood pile, coming on.
Step this way, ladies and gentlemen, and see how the hand is quicker than the eye.
Back when I was in university, a friend said to me, "Hey, one of the other students is performing a magic show at the Rundown Mall. Let's go heckle him." So, like punks, we did. Thing was, the magician heckled us back and made us look like small-minded chumps. After the show, the magician came over to us and politely introduced himself, and somehow won us over as friends. The magician's name was Scott Humston, and I've stayed friends with the man for just shy of 25 years. Humston made himself appear magically, back by the woodpile, and shared a glimpse into his illusion of a career.
As far back as history goes, we find that conjuring and magic tricks have always fascinated human beings of all ages and of all classes.
How did you get into magic?
I got tricked into it.
Seriously?
No. Well, my dad was a pastor, uh-huh. And we had a guy come to our church, uh-huh. And he would do magic tricks for Vacation Bible School and uh-huh. That sort of thing. And so that was my first exposure to it uh-huh. As a small child. Uh-huh. My third grade teacher gave me a punch-out little magic set, mm-hmm. Like a, you know, you made out of paper, basically. Mm-hmm. And then she gave it, I think, everyone in the class, but I got that. I remember being fascinated with that. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, I got a deck of cards mm-hmm. to learn card tricks, which my mom, being the good pastor's wife at that mm-hmm. time, promptly made the cards disappear because those were, of course, of the devil. Uh-huh. And she thought no good would come out of cards from with an 8-year-old. Mm-hmm. When I moved back to Florida with my family from Kansas, we had some friends over, a doctor friend that was over, and his kids were there, and my friend from down the street was there, and they were digging in my closet. They were younger than I was. I remember this. They were digging in my closet. They found a magic set mm-hmm. that I had gotten for my birthday, a little larger magic set by that time. And my friend said, "I have a magic set mm-hmm. in my house." So the next day, I think it was, maybe even that same day, I went down there and got his magic set. He brought his to me, whatever. We got together on it. And his was a much greater involved magic set. It was soon after that I was at my grandparents' house in Auburndale, Florida. And we were going to Walmart, me and my granddad. Mm-hmm. And we were going through town. And I looked out, and lo and behold, there was a magic shop in this little tiny town of Auburndale, Florida. Mm-hmm. And it was called VIP Magic. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Granddad, stop. So he stopped. And we got out, went to the magic shop. And I haven't been the same since.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I can tell you what.
How much stuff did you buy?
Not very much. I got two things that day, uh-huh. and I still have them. But I proceeded to go back to that shop many times, as much as I could. Uh-huh. Suddenly, I had a great interest in spending time at my grandparents' house. Okay. That led to finding a magic club that met in the shop, uh-huh. which I had never heard of such a thing, uh-huh. you know. And so,
what was that like? I mean, what are at that age?
It was great because my friend that. Down the street, Mike is his name, still my friend today, Mike McCucci, went with me to the club. So we were like literally junior high school, mm-hmm. and the club was full of, you know, there were maybe some late 20s, 30s, 40s, 40-year-old guys mm-hmm. in the club, and so we were kind of like the new blood, you know, everybody mm-hmm. could practice tricks on us, and mm-hmm. we could be amazed, and but those guys really helped me a lot. Mm-hmm. All of those guys. And I'm still friends with almost all of them if they're still living.
Yeah.
And most of them are. You know, like any other field, there are predators in mm-hmm. in almost anything. In from law enforcement to clergy, you know, mm-hmm. to clowns, to grocery store workers, you know. There's wackos everywhere. But we met several years later, in a restaurant. And the restaurant...
The club,
the magic club, yes. Yeah.
I thought you and the Predator.
Right, no. We met in this restaurant. I remember, never really told anybody this.
Did
you need a tissue? No, I'm good. It was like a steakhouse, like a bonanza, that kind of place. They had paper placemats with advertisements around the edge. You know what I'm talking about, right? Uh-huh. I was a very entrepreneurial child, as my mom would say. I was the kind of kid that would try to sell Cheerios as donut seeds to my neighbors. Okay. And so I saw that I could advertise on this. I saw it.
How old were you at the time?
I was at this time junior high school, I don't know, you know, seventh grade.
Thinking ahead, right.
So I saw, hey, I could call, I could put my ad, I could put my business card. I had a business card by this time. So I called, it said, for advertising on this placemat, call Enterprises. So I called this guy and he was very interested. Well, how old are you and what do you do? And so I explained to him that the Magic Club met it and we saw the blah, blah, blah. And he said, well, I do some booking on the side, so I might want to book you. Mm-hmm. And he said, where are you going to be performing at? Mm-hmm. Well, I had, you know, only had a few shows a month as a kid, but I said, why don't you...
I mean, at junior high, where were you playing at?
I was playing Rotary Clubs and golf communities.
Really?
And yeah. Okay. They would like the Rotary Club, they would come pick me up at school. Wow. And I would go... And I would go do the show, and then bring me back to school. car openings. One of my clients was Needlepoint, etc. It was a supply house for Needlepoint workers. Uh-huh. Anyhow, back to the story. So this guy said, "I said, well, I don't know. I don't have any shows coming up anytime soon. Why don't you come to my house?" And I'll do a show for you there. I had a large room. And so sure enough, he came over and I put on a magic show for him. Now, of course, I was smart enough to have my parents' permission and make sure they were home. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to do this. And so he came in and I did a little show for him. I don't think he was impressed. And so my mom was there the whole time watching out, you know, keeping a watchful eye. Mm-hmm. I'm sure her weirdo radar went off when he came in. Uh-huh. And but it was about a year or two later that she said, let me show you this. Mm-hmm. And it was something in the paper, he had been arrested on some pedophilia or something like that.
Wow. Little boys and big boys, young boys and old boys with long whiskers, even little girls, stare wide-eyed at the magician when he is performing tricks.
All that being said is that it was the Magic Club was a safe place to be, and my childhood was not ruined by anybody there. It was enhanced by these guys. It took an interest in me and in my hobby, and they loved magic too. So.
Okay.
Though today Scott is a very successful full-time magician, things didn't go so well at first.
Well, when I was in high school, I created a trick made very popular by Houdini called the Metamorphosis, where you lock, the performer gets locked in handcuffs, put inside a bag that is tied, and the bag is put in a trunk, a wooden trunk, like a packing crate, which is then locked all around. Mm-hmm. And then the assistant gets on top of the trunk, and in the blink of an eye, the magician is now on top of the trunk, and the assistant is in the crate.
Right.
Thus changing metamorphosis. We did a little bit different. I would, my assistant would start in the trunk, and then I would be in the trunk at the end. We would switch places. It's a great trick. I love the trick. Uh-huh. I had it built in high school. Uh-huh. And I was doing the Florida Citrus Festival and with a show called Citrus Magic, which I sold them myself. And
very rough crowd.
I had a 10-day run. I got to get out of high school to go do these shows. And so I closed with the sub-trunk or the metamorphosis illusion. And... can't without going into all the details, but let's just say that the secret messed up and I got stuck in the trunk. Now, had I been a little older than 17 at the time, my thoughts about me, I could have probably made this better than it ended up, but I was 17 and I was stuck in a trunk on stage and yelling at my assistant, just tell him the show's over. Just tell him the show is over. I can't get out of the box. You can't open it up. Just tell him the show. And she's leaning over the trunk going, what? What? And then she goes, and this is all on video, by the way. She goes, oh, the show's over. Good night. Uh-huh. Well, I had some magician friends in the audience that knew something was wrong. Uh-huh. So they came up on stage and carried me off stage in the trunk. And as soon as I got off stage, I hopped out and ran around to the front of the tent. It was a very large tent, like a 400-seat tent. Uh-huh. And as people were leaving, I was out front.
Oh.
So it took the heat off a little bit, but not too much. Uh-huh. And not to mention, the best line was when she says, the show's over, thank you, I have another show tomorrow at whatever. Uh-huh. Some guy yells, will he be out of the trunk by then?
Now if any bright little boy in the audience can figure out how this trick is done, I wish you would write to me about it.
Yeah, you look back on that. I was mortified at the time.
I imagine. I mean, did you think, like, this is it? I'm not going to do this ever again?
No, no, I didn't think about it. I'm too stupid, I guess, to think that, but... I had joined the FHA, the Future Homemakers of America. Well, no, I joined that because that's where the girls were.
All right.
And a friend of mine and I decided, well, the FFA, the Future Farmers of America, has all farmers. Yeah. And we weren't band people. We weren't a band. And I had some home ec classes. So I wanted to learn to sew so I could make magic props. Okay. And
so you say.
And, yeah. And there were some beautiful young ladies in the FHA. So I decided, me and my friend joined. So long story short, they asked me to do a show for the regional convention of all the high school students. I must have been in like eighth grade. And it was a bus ride early one morning, getting on a bus at school. I remember having my magic prop, my table, and taking my tape, my magic table, my props, and I'm in my my tailcoat. And I get to this venue. I find out there's going to be 1,300 people at this event. I never performed for that many people ever in my life at that point. It's 1,300 people. Well, I'm doing a card trick on stage.
Oh, no.
And it's, you know, very small props. So I do a card trick, and the card disappears out of my hand and appears under one of the seats. So I put the card under one of the seats.
Before the show.
Before the show. The card that's supposedly going to disappear. So I planted it there. And the card disappears during my little act. But they rearrange the seats on me.
Oh, no.
Right? And so we never... Oh, and this is great. So during the trick, I'm like, and it should be under your seat. Look under your seat. Everybody's looking under the seat. Nobody finds a card. So there's no ending to the trick, right? There's whatever. Well, it gets better. I don't know if you remember the whole story, but I did another bit.
So how did you cover?
I don't know. I just said, well, that's that, probably. Well, that's the end of that trick. I probably said, never mind, or something like that. Now you know I went into comedy magic, and so
that's true. I would say that you are funny. Me and my fiance went to see you, and we laughed and laughed and laughed. And I think you could use that to cover when you do screw up.
Yeah. Well, the same show. I'm in my tailcoat on stage. I did a bit with a bottomless glass, where I'm going to make the egg disappear. Now, I don't know why I learned this. I learned it from some magician that was an idiot, I guess. But it was a bottomless glass. In other words, it did not have a bottom in it. Okay. And so you get a kid on stage, and you break an egg, and then you pick up the glass. You go, oh, I'm sorry, I got the wrong glass. Well, the egg is all over their hand, right? I don't know. I don't remember what I used to do with that, but I used to do it. And so I'm in front of this large audience, and the card trick is already screwed up. So I get a kid up there. Now, I'm a kid myself, where I break the egg, and, oh, I'm sorry, I have the wrong glass. I really had no ending either. And he took the egg, and he smeared it all over the front of my – he went from his hand and went – all over the front of my tux.
Really?
Just all over the front of it, yeah.
Was he angry or something?
No, the audience, I wrote later, my little journal, the audience cheered me because I didn't do anything to him. Little twerp. He was probably bigger than I was. But like 3 weeks later, I get a piece of mail at the school, in my junior high school, to the home ec teacher, gives it to me. She said, this came for you in the mail. It was a card, a thank you card, from the people that organized this big rally. And inside it was the card, the missing ace. They had found it when they put up the chairs. And I still have it in my scrapbook today.
That's great.
The missing card. So that was, but you know, everybody, whether you're a magician or a musician or a preacher or a teacher, you got to have a place to be bad.
It's practice, yeah.
Yeah, you got to have a place to be bad. And for me...
It's been your entire career.
Yes, sir. You just ruined a good moment.
I'm sorry.
No, for me, it was you know, as a kid, because I started so young, and that was my place to be bad, you know?
Went to school together. I remember you had befriended an older magician who was kind of a legend, and so to talk about him.
Sure. His name was Fetake Sanders, and he was a leading black magician during the 1930s and 40s. He knew Pearl Bailey and Langston Hughes, and traveled with Pearl Bailey in the USA show, in the segregated troop of the USO show during World War II, and was also at the Chicago World's Fair performing. Performed through the segregated South. But I met him through a friend named Sammy Smith. Sammy is now the editor of the Linking Ring magazine. But Sammy was dating a girl in Nashville, Tennessee. And he had read in the Linking Ring magazine, before he was the editor, he had read in the Sick and Convalescent, there's a page in there every month of magicians that are sick and
or dying,
and, you know, send them a good wish, you know, which is a very good idea. So Sammy had seen that Fetake was living in Nashville, and he was dating this girl in Nashville. So at one time...
And Sammy had never met Fetake.
Sammy never met him. So he came up here, befriended Fetake, take care of him. Fetake had one daughter who was living in the Baltimore area, but no other family here.
I see.
And there was a somewhat a strange relationship with his daughter. So when I chose to come to Nashville to school, my friend Sammy said, well, you got to meet Fetake. And I think he knew secretly, hey, you could help me. I don't have to go up there as much, which was fine. And so I came to Nashville to school, and that was in August, and then of my freshman year. And then November of that year, Sammy came up. Sammy said, I want you to meet this kid named Scott. And Fetake did not want to meet me.
Why?
Yeah, he's just stubborn that way. He didn't want to. I don't think he wanted to interfere with the relationship he had with Sammy, maybe. But Sammy said, well, he has a car. And Fetake said, okay, I'll meet him.
I see.
So Sammy brought him over to the college where we went, and I met him. And I said, here's my phone number. If you ever need anything, call me. And the next day, he called me. The very next day. And he said, hey, this is Fetake Sanders. And he was in a nursing facility at that time. But he had a home still in Nashville. And so he went to dialysis 3 days a week. But on the non-dialysis days, he would call me. And he would he want me to take him to the store or to somewhere because he didn't have a car. And go get apples. He loved apples. And he lived in this disgusting, as you recall, nursing facility. And he'd say, this is Apple Man. Let's go get some apples. And I remember one time I was listening to him, being not from a big city, and he was driving me to where he wanted to go get apples, which was the hood where he lived. Off
what
of
part of Nashville was that?
We were on off of 18th, and not far from the Carnegie Library over there, off of 40 and 18th. He lived on a street called Hyman, Hyman Street, two doors down from the Hacienda. Hotel, which was not a hotel. Remember that?
Yeah, it was like a...
It was a brothel.
Brothel, okay.
Yeah, yeah. It even had the red lights out front.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Anyway, yeah, go ahead. Sorry, I was like, where
are we? And so we drove all the way over there. I remember driving, and I'm like driving in my minivan, Mr. White Boy, going, I'm not getting out here. So I turned around when it came all the way back to another grocery store. I said, they have apples here too. And so I got his apples. But
he understood.
He understood. Yes, he understood. Yeah, he was very sharp.
Did anybody ever harass him or anything?
When one reason he moved to the nursing facility is he got mugged in his own front yard.
That's what I remember,
Yeah, and we would go over there in his house, and we'd be sure to be out by dark because it was not in a good area, but it was a very large house, like 14 rooms or something. You were there, and just an amazing house. It's gone now. They tore it down. He left it to this church, Capitol Hill Baptist Church, and they eventually tore the house down.
Right.
I have a brick from the house.
Oh, okay. I remember when we went, it was after he passed away, I guess, right?
It was after he passed away.
And why were we over there? I can't even remember.
Probably getting something or going through some stuff. It took us 2.5 years to clean out his house.
So he left that to you?
No, no. He left the house to...
I mean, he left the job to clean it out.
Well, he left the job to clean it out to Sammy, my friend Sammy. But Sammy would come up here, and then I and Sammy and then another guy who we named Dave, Dave Price, who had known Fetake his whole life since being a young man. And they did a lot more of the cleaning than I did. I was in college at that, but they rented a dumpster and cleaned out the house. And And the eggs in the refrigerator, did I show you that? Open up the refrigerator, there's still eggs in there.
Oh, no. He hadn't been there for years.
Right? Oh, he hadn't lived there for years and years, but it was very bad.
Did they find anything valuable, like magician stuff-wise? Or
and there was a few things in there that, and again, what's valuable to a magician is not valuable to anybody else.
Right.
And there were some pieces and trinkets that were valuable to me, mm-hmm. and to Sammy and to Dave. And mm-hmm. we found the guillotine, the head chopper trick that he used in his show,
okay.
Which unfortunately is elsewhere. It has fallen out of our possession at the moment. But mm-hmm. Sammy had part of this story. Sammy, through this relationship over the years, had printed a book mm-hmm. that Fitek was kind of a catalyst for, called Sell Your Act with Posters. Mm-hmm. Fitek was very much an artist. Mm-hmm. Not just performing artist, but a drawing artist. Mm-hmm. So a lot of his publicity he did himself. Very, very good stuff. Well, Sammy put a book together called Sell Your Act with Posters that featured Fitek's posters mm-hmm. and other magicians' posters.
Mm-hmm. Has anybody done a book on him?
Not yet. Sammy would be the one in charge of that, mm-hmm. and I've pushed him, mm-hmm. and I hope it happens soon.
Well, we'll try. We'll try to.
That's right.
Push it, yeah. Come on, Sammy, get on it.
Okay. Now, he was featured in a book about black magicians, uh-huh. And I can't recall the name of the book, uh-huh. but he was featured in that book.
Okay. Any other thoughts on Fitek, or did you learn anything from him?
Oh, yeah. One of my favorite stories about Fitek, and I only really knew him the last 3 years of his life, uh-huh. so it wasn't all that long, of course, and I was very busy with college and
girls
and
boys.
Friends that would do crazy things. He came to see me. Sammy was up, and I asked Sammy to bring Fitek to one of my shows, which happened to be at a local Nashville church. Mm-hmm. And so I got there to set up, and Sammy and Fitek arrived a little while later. It was a Sunday evening program, and there were 6 people there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
That was it. And mm-hmm. 3 of them were me, Fitek, and Sammy.
Did you promote your show on posters?
I had sent some posters, but when I arrived at the church, the pastor, who now says he forgot this story because he's pastoring very large churches, but anyhow, I remember this. I will never forget this. When I showed up, he said, "Oh, is tonight the night you're coming?" Which is not what you want to hear when you're doing something on a love offering, you know, So Fitek, after that, he was a showman, uh-huh. and after that he said, "You can't play ball without a team." In other words, the show was not all that great because uh-huh. the audience wasn't all that great.
Right.
You know, I should have changed focus. You right. know, and it was a learning experience. I was probably 19 at the time.
I remember a couple things about him because I only met him like maybe a few times, I think. But at the hospital,
you came to the hospital with me, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember he made his pills disappear.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, and the nurses were complaining about it, like because he would still do like little coin tricks with his pills.
Oh,
and it would just irritate. It was amusing him like once, but he kept doing it. And the other thing I remember was this: he had this trick with an elephant butt.
Oh, yes.
So explain that if you don't mind.
Well, in his retirement, which was years, he stopped doing shows in like the 60s. Okay. And so he would try to sell things to other magicians,
and we knew him back in the 90s.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So we're talking 30 years of mm-hmm. not doing anything but collecting mm-hmm. crap in his house, literally and figuratively. He had come up with this trick. He has a picture of him on an elephant mm-hmm. That he was with a circus for a short time as the magician. Mm-hmm. And so he had a picture of the front of the elephant and the back of the elephant. And he came up with this trick that the elephant would disappear. In your hands, like a card trick, and so it would, the front of the elephant would be gone, and you would open your hands, and it would be the back or the butt of the elephant. Uh-huh. And we found in cleaning out his house, 1,000 of these picture cards of the elephant's butt. So I gave them out liberally to friends.
You had younger magicians like shadow you?
You know what? Not yet. I've been thinking about that a lot because I was mentored. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can name the 5 guys that really mentored me. Mm-hmm. Fitek, mm-hmm. Sammy, another guy named Steve Pennington. Mm-hmm. And
Steve Pennington, he has a little bit of a reputation because would he help start Pro Kids, right?
Pro Kids,
And
Snowbird. And
was it called Anna? Animax.
Animax Studios, yeah. Yeah, and then Felix Snipes was the last one that really poured his life into me. Mm-hmm. So I've been looking for that. So far I haven't met that. And I feel kind of, I say guilty about it, not guilty, but I want to make that happen if it's possible, because those guys, it took me, I had a guy named Bob, used to pick me up at my house and bring me to the Magic Club. Mm-hmm. You know, my own dad couldn't do it.
Right.
And so Bob would do that, and that was great. And not that I get to go to the Magic Club because I'm working, but still, I would hope at some point that I could start pouring myself into somebody.
Like, what is the oldest known recording of someone performing, like, Illusions or?
Well, you know, as time goes on, things are discovered more and more and right. more. I read an article not long ago about a card move with it was dated in Italy, you know, years and years ago. We're talking, what was it, in the 1400s or something mm-hmm. like that, that people thought this was invented in the, I think one writer had thought it was invented like in the, maybe the, you know, maybe the late 1800s, uh-huh. but in all fields, I think mm-hmm. people end up discovering, people were just as smart then as they are now, mm-hmm. maybe not with all the technology, but the earliest are supposedly, and I've seen photographs of these things, of pictures of Egyptian magicians doing the cups and balls mm, trick.
Really?
Yeah, in among the hieroglyphics in Egypt.
Yeah.
So that is dates very far back. And of course, the Chinese mm-hmm. Have a rich history of magic and mm-hmm. illusion with whether it's the linking ring trick or another trick that I really like called the snowstorm in China mm-hmm. Trick with paper. Mm-hmm. So magic goes back a very, very long way.
Okay. And you play a lot of churches. Does anybody ever give you grief and say that you're part of this long line of satanic entertainment or whatever?
Because of the magic or because of
just
the cards?
Magic or, cards, all that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, no, not really. I mean, I have had, when I was in high school again, I was doing an event for outside mall, like a strip mall. Mm-hmm. And there was no place to perform, really, mm-hmm. other than like in the corner where the two wings of this place met. Mm-hmm. And so I was doing shows standing out there, street magic, before it was real popular. I was doing a straight jacket. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, I remember I had some people come up to me there and wanted to know if they'd pray for me. Mm-hmm. And of course, I let them pray for me for a moment, and then they continued. They were trying to pray Satan out of me, I think, mm-hmm. at that moment. I had to stop them from praying because I said—
You wanted Satan to stay.
No, I said, I really appreciate you praying for me, but I do have some work to do. I was hired to be here.
Oh, wow.
And so I had to interrupt them and stop their prayer.
When a magician rattles a box and plays the tune on his magic flute, there is sure something doing.
I'll ask you one more question then. What's the most like heartwarming thing or thing that you felt like, okay, that's made all this work worth it? Or
yeah, now, you know, my shows have different levels of them, whether it's teaching or sharing or ministering, sharing the gospel of Christ through my shows. It's really kind of a passion of mine. So I'm using...
So for the people listening, you do both gospel shows and secular shows as well.
Right,
yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah, but everything I do always has some kind of underlying...
Dark message.
Some kind of underlying betterness to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Whether it's a small little lesson or a larger lesson. Mm-hmm. And I honor my audience in that regard and try not to be manipulative at all. But when I was in college, I've done many things over the years, but when I was in college, I was doing a lot of work for Vanderbilt Children's Hospital. Uh-huh. And I would do for years, I did their big end-of-the-year Christmas party mm-hmm. that the Junior League, the Nashville Women's Junior League, would hire me, and they would invite every kid that had been in the hospital that year back to this party. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of kids.
Yeah.
Occasionally, I would get a call from the Junior League to come and perform in the playroom, much smaller. So one time I got a call, I was newly married, and I got a call to come to the playroom and entertain, and she said, we're going to have another very special musician there, mm-hmm. but we want you to do some magic, and he's going to sing. It was a guy named Michael W. Smith. Who at that time was very popular, not only in Christian music industry, as he still is very popular, but he was had a lot of crossover hits, Place right. in This World. And
yeah, yeah.
So he was very popular at that time.
A nice guy. I actually parked his car one time when I was a valet. Yeah,
super nice guy.
And you can't say that about all the people that you meet.
No.
So
I was in the playroom. We're talking just a handful of kids, maybe 10. They're all ushered out of their room and, you know, and they got leukemia and everything else. Mm-hmm. And I did my little shtick. And then Michael came up and started playing on the keyboard, and the kids started leaving while he was playing. Afterwards, I was carrying some things, and he said, "Can I help you carry your props to your car?" Mm-hmm. I said, "That'd be a great honor. I'd appreciate that." So we walked to the parking garage together. Mm-hmm. And he said, "I have a lot of kids. Do you do birthday parties?" Mm-hmm. And I kind of laughed about it. And as we were walking, he said, "He said I should open for you. They liked you a lot better than they liked me." I said, "Well, I appreciate that, mm-hmm. but you know, I said they don't know who you are. You know, all the parents were enthralled. Right. You know, or the." But during that time, I say all that to say this, that during that time, there was a lady there taking pictures. Mm-hmm. And she called me, one of the ladies in the junior league, and got my address. And one day, there was a package at my door. And I opened this package, and it was a picture, a black and white photograph, of this me sitting next to this little boy doing the sponge ball trick. But his face and my face were hand-painted. Colored in by hand. Uh-huh. And you could see under the mask that he wore, because he has bald head, he had leukemia, no hair, this mask to prevent germs. And I'm kind of leaning next to him. You could see this giant smile under his mask. You could see his eyes squinted up and this giant smile. Mm-hmm. And she titled the picture, "Joy Comes in the Morning," which is based on a psalm. Uh-huh. And so I look at that. It's in my home library at home. Mm-hmm. And, that reminds me that, you know, what I do is great and what I do is priceless and it, you know, and everybody has those moments, but that probably solidified it for me.
So with an eye full of magic and an ear full of weird music, we're going home to see if we can figure it all out.
If you'd like to book Scott for a show or heckle him from afar, you can check him out at scotthumston.com. That's S-C-O-T-T. HUMSTON.com. In the Corner, Back by the Woodpile podcast is produced by a closet, a pocket, and a suitcase. You can email us at spuncounterguy@hotmail.com. And a special thanks to thebrofisticate.com.